No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So feel free to call in and be part of the conversation at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBS Radio. Maria is running a couple minutes late. She'll be with us shortly. But tonight we have two guests to talk about an upcoming event that we hope will change the trajectory of the social movement we have here in America for DC statehood, green earth, and justice. And with us tonight is Representative Charles Moreland. He was the first elected representative for the District of Columbia. And Joel Siegel, the founder and executive director of Justice Action Mobilization Network. Thanks for being with us tonight, gentlemen. Charles, why don't you start by explaining to us exactly what we want to do on August 28th and why August 28th and what are your hopes?
Thank you so much, Senator Brown, for all that you do and for giving us an opportunity to just explain what we're going to be doing on the 28th of August, 2021 in Washington, D.C. Let me give you a little historical background. This all, I think, has its origin from the events that really started in 1957 when 25,000 demonstrators gathered at the Lincoln Memorial to commemorate the anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. In 1963, in the wake of the violent attacks on civil rights demonstrators in Birmingham, Alabama, momentum built for another mass protest in the nation's capital. A. Philip Randolph was planning a march for jobs, and Martin Luther King and his Southern Christian Leadership Conference was planning one for freedom. The two groups decided to merge their efforts to one mass protest, at one mass protest. And that's similar to what we're doing right now. The Douglas Commonwealth Coalition, which is consists of the current and past elected members of the D.C. statehood delegation, decided that we were going to have a march to commemorate the March on Washington on August 26th, which is the 58th anniversary. And we found that the National Action Network, in fact, quite a few other organizations are planning to have events on the 28th. And so we've been negotiating with the National Action Network and another number of other organizations to address the current mix of crisis circumstances that threaten not just African Americans, but actually the human species, really. And that's not an exaggeration. The crisis maybe we face today includes the COVID-19 pandemic, cataclysmic climate change, fascist, racist, right-wing insurrections who are trying to destroy American democracy. So at the suggestion of a dear friend that Joel Siegel brought to me, Harvey Wasserman, we have formed a three-issue coalition, which is designed to bring all these organizations under the banner of D. D.C. statehood, green earth issues, and justice and voting rights issues. So that's where we are. So Joel is also going to have on justice an event on the Justice Roundtable on Monday to end the weekend off.
So do you want to talk about that for a minute, Joel? What are you going to do on Monday? What's the Justice Roundtable about?
Sure. Senator Brown, honored to be with you and really Thanks. Honored to be with my brother and my friend and brilliant colleague, Brother Charles Moreland. So, yeah, on Monday, we will be having at Plymouth United Church of Christ, that's the Honorable Reverend Grayland Hackless Church, we're going to have a roundtable of leaders, who are coming in from other cities, to have a very serious discussion about forming one united progressive umbrella coalition that would be a home for all progressives. And the idea is that it's what Mandela said, we're stronger together than we are apart. And given the threat of climate change, given the threat of the far right wing, Jim Crow secessionist movement, and the fact that we still have persistent poverty, that we don't have D.C. statehood, if we're going to win our battle, we cannot do it without more reinforcements. We need the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the SEALs to work together if we're going to change this country and save the world from climate change. We had that discussion 1-5 on Monday the 30th, and Charles said it's a turning point. It is going to be a turning point.
Well, let me ask you, isn't this a problem for us, too, consistently? You know, there's the old adage in Democratic politics that when it comes to politics, Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. Isn't that part of our problem? You know, Will Rogers said, I belong to no organized political movement. I'm a Democrat. Haven't we suffered from that for a long time?
Yes. I mean, I think what happened was the nonprofit world, thank God for them, really began competing for scarce dollars, or what they perceived as scarce dollars. And there are financial incentives called a foundation grant, which can also be a reason for not having unity. And in terms of ideas, progressive political ideas, I would say I have never seen the progressive movement with such agreement, whether it's Medicare for All, which I'm the author of that bill when I work for Congressman John Conyers, Jobs for All, Housing for All, 100% clean, renewable energy, rapid transition, dealing with, you know, racism. And, we're now, I think, and probably at least in my lifetime, we're at the pinnacle of unity outside of Congress. And if you look at Congress, I've never seen the progressive caucus or progressive members of Congress be really viewed as a real power broker, which is what I worked on for years. I've worked in Congress for 13 years. So actually, it has more to do with leadership. And people like you, Senator Brown, and Charles Moreland, and Harvey Wasserman, and we're going to have the president of NOW. We've got all kinds of leaders coming in, believe that if we don't unite, we will not be able to save our earth or save our democracy. So this is about a necessity, and, you know, it only makes sense, right, to get millions and millions of people, you know, working together.
And I should mention that Congressman Conyers, who you worked for, was a real hero to all of us in the statehood movement. You know, he was always very kind with his advice and always a strong supporter of our efforts, and we're so encouraged to have you, Joel, involved in all this. So, Charles, tell us what the plans are for the march, because we want people to be involved, right? We want you to come to Washington. Maybe you weren't there in 1963, but you have an opportunity to be there now, and it's just as important, I believe, as it was in 1963. You want to speak to that, Charles?
Yes, and also following up on the question you just asked, Joel. First of all, we have to give the people a reason to come to D.C., a reason to commemorate Martin Luther King's March on Washington. the natural course of injustice is that a people who are oppressed will remain oppressed until they stand up against the oppressor. So we want everybody to know, first of all, that the citizens of Washington, D.C. are fed up. And we're going to stand up. Statehood is our dream. And I want to tell you that the citizens of Washington, D.C. are ready to stand up against congressional tyranny. Now, the urgency here is that we are closer than we have ever been to becoming a state. But close don't count. 99.5 won't do. We have to have 100. And so we know that if we stand up, the citizens of Washington, D.C., stand up and demand freedom. And this particular time and this particular date, ours is a movement whose time has come. And we ought to realize that it is not just possible, it is likely and probable. They said that the Confederate flag would never come down in the state of Mississippi, in the South.
That's true.
And they said that apartheid would never end in South Africa.
True.
And yet, when the time came for change, it happened. So what we're going to do is we're going to launch and kick off our movement, and it's going to be a unified movement, something that has never happened before. And we're talking about unifying statehood supporters, and statehood, which is an end to taxation without representation, is the most noble democracy movement in the world, not just in the country. Because in D.C., we're not just talking about voter suppression. We're talking about termination, the end, no vote at all. So what we plan to do is on Friday, we're going to have a Martin Luther King Justice Awards ceremony. So I'm asking everybody who's listening to go on our website, and that's www.douglass.us. And we have all of the plans on the website. You go to Dream March, and you'll see all the events, the schedule of events, starting with the Martin Luther King Justice Award ceremony, and that's going to be at the African American Civil War Museum. And the African American Civil War Museum is absolutely perfect for this event. And the National the American Civil War Museum has a little foyer outside, so the event is going to be outside, and we don't have to worry about trying to plan for people to be inside during this COVID pandemic. And of course, the pandemic has shaped the urgency, along with the fact that the earth is on fire, the world is on fire. So motivation, all of us, everybody needs to come out and throw a glass of water or something on this fire that's raging all over the earth and stand up for human rights. So the award ceremony is going to kick off the weekend. And then we're going to have the Dream March. The Dream March rally is going to start at Freedom Plaza at 8:30 in the morning. And it's going to end at 10:30 to 11. We're going to march down to the National Mall and the Lincoln Memorial. And we're going to disperse. And then we're going to have a series of events and pavilions at the mall up until 3:30, and we're going to disperse, and then in the evening we're going to start again with an evening rally. On Sunday we're going to have a dream prayer vigil, and we're asking ministers, imams, priests, rabbis, Native American spiritual leaders, a broad range of individuals, and anybody that wants to come down to Freedom Plaza on Sunday and pray We need prayer. Listen, this is an existential threat that we are facing, and we need prayer. So we're calling on this faith-based group of individuals, preachers, and just people who believe in prayer, to come down and pray. Okay? And then on Monday, we're going to have a rally to make the White House the Green House, where Harvey Wasserman and green organizations are going to propose to the White House and make it possible for the White House to be the first capital in the world that becomes all green. Now, then we're going to wrap it up with Joel Siegel. He has been outstanding and brilliant in organizing the National Justice Roundtable, where we're going to come together and we're going to plan a unified campaign of action. What are we going to do? We're not just coming out to march and rally. We're going to come up with an overall game plan from the people, from the bottom up. We're going to identify the problems and offer solutions to solve the problems that we have today.
So thanks. May I interject,
yeah.
Michael? I've been on the call.
This is Maria, by the way, for any of you listening. This is my co-host, Maria. Go ahead, Maria.
Hi, Maria. Hi, and you two were speaking so eloquently, I didn't want to interrupt. But being a Republican in California, what I'd like to say is that this sounds to me about nonpartisan, not political, but bipartisan. And I love the fact that you're using progressive and not liberal, because it's something that I can identify with and that I want to get involved in and that I want to support. Because everything that you said makes common sense between DC statehood, green earth, and justice. Who can argue with those concepts?
Exactly.
Well said by a Republican. And you're right. This is not, we haven't mentioned partisanship. What we're doing is we're reaching out to every ethnic group. We have special outreach for Native Americans, for women, for Republicans. We want everybody to come under this broad umbrella. And statehood traditionally has been supported by Republicans as well as Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
traditionally
true.
Because who can argue against ending taxation without representation? For yes. Republicans, it's not if, it's how.
Right.
So that's the only
and
way we differ. Yes.
Yeah.
But when? It's got to be now. We can't stand it anymore. I can't breathe. Every morning I wake up, I really can't. Can't breathe. And I can't accept the fact that with all the decisions have to be made in the Congress, we don't have a voice. Humanity is at stake. And quite frankly, if D.C. had two senators, we would have those bills passed. So leaving us out of the democratic process is not only a crack in the Liberty Bell, it's damaging to our democratic process and actually doing damage to the world.
Harvey, can you tell us what the Justice Action Mobilization Network is?
Oh, you mean Joel, probably Joel, right?
I'm sorry, Joel.
That's okay, man.
You know,
they sound alike sometimes.
It's all good.
I'm sorry. When you're old, this happens. Go ahead.
I do have senior moments, and but I was going to say, your colleague, I do want to emphasize that, you know, justice, saving the planet, clean energy, affordable housing, whatever, good schools. It is not partisan. It's just called smart and doing the right thing. And when I worked in Congress, I worked with many moderate Republicans. I used to do the negotiations with the Bush White House, and we got PEPFAR, $15 billion in money for AIDS. So it isn't what you said and what Paul said is not an unrealistic thing. There's a lot of progressives on the Republican and the Democratic side. It's just time to come together and save the planet. Justice Action Mobilization Network was started 9 years ago, and there were leaders from the climate action and social justice movement who felt like the climate change movement needed to be more representative of ethnic communities. And I am a Jewish person. I consider myself a member of an ethnic community. And so we had, we wanted to focus on federal legislation being introduced in Congress that we want to pass, which would basically take the work of Professor Mark Jacobson, who I work very closely with out of Stanford, who has a plan for every single state to transition to 100% clean renewable energy, and all over the world, every country in the world. We felt like there needed to be a much broader movement, more intersectional, more multiracial. We had two national conferences. The who's who of the who's who were at both conferences, and there was an agreement at NYU a few years ago to, you know, form this unified, you know, progressive climate action movement. And that's where everyone got to know each other in leadership or people working in, you know, climate action spaces. And so it is a network, but also we work around particular legislation if we want to pass legislation.
And am I correct? I think the impression out there is that some of the things that we haven't done to address green earth issues, for example, are a limit of our technology. Is our technology limited? Do we not have more solar panel? Do we not have more solar power because we don't have the technology to get it? Or do we not have it because of the politics?
100% lacking of political will, which comes from what Charles was talking about earlier, and that's pressure from the people. So that's really what's going on. So in terms of the science of, you know, solar energy has gone down precipitously over the last several years. It's cheaper than, you know, oil or gas or coal.
Yeah.
The problem used to be battery storage. Well, that ended in Australia when one of the world's largest battery is used to, in Australia, to when you're what called off peak hours, right? If the sun's not shining, you still have the electricity stored in these gigantic batteries, and we have microgrids. There's all different kinds of ways to use solar, but the sense of urgency was not in the Congress when I was there, or even over the last year or so. But with the fires raging out west, drought, lack of water out west, flooding in, you know, China, flooding in Europe, you know, the Arctic had wildfires. People are scared and they're realizing that we got to do something. And, you know, why not combine that work with DC statehood or ending homelessness? And if it's a matter of justice, we should all work on it together, because the political will. And Charles worked in Congress. He understands if you don't push Congress from below, you're letting well-intentioned Hill staffers from the ages of 21 and 30 control the destiny of America and the planet. So we have to be way more sophisticated than we've been before if we're going to get that political will. Science is there. That's a great question, by the way. Very good question.
And he's preaching to the choir, right, Maria, as somebody from California,
yes,
when it comes to climate change?
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Maria. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to know that I noticed on the website that you asked for folks to register. Do you want to promote that on the program too, so that you get a handle on how many people to expect?
Yes, absolutely. But Maria, let me just commend you for the fine work that you're doing and the importance of your voice.
Thank you.
It is so important that Republicans, independents, realize that this is not a partisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a struggle between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
But the haves have a way of dividing us into camps and silos to compete against each other, and some of us even abandon self-preservation instincts and common sense and vote against our own interests, following a partisan misdirection. So what you're doing and what you say is very important. I want to speak to Republicans. When you're talking about voter suppression, these laws that they're introducing don't just suppress black votes, black folks are not the only ones that can't get driver's license. I was helping a senior citizen who was white, who was born in 1929 and was trying to get a driver's license, some ID, and can't get it because of mistakes on her birth certificate, where the person who delivered her was put her name in the place where the child is supposed to be. So those kind of errors and mistakes were being made. They don't just affect one race of people. They affect poor people, and they can't. So that voter suppression affects a whole lot of folks who are of various different races. I just want to say that. And,
well, you're speaking about my mother, if you don't mind me interrupting. And I thought maybe it was my mother you were helping, but she's born in 33. Same thing. She was born at home with a midwife who had to rush to the next delivery and never filled out the birth certificate. And so she had to go through this whole process in order to prove that she's actually who she is. It's been ridiculous and, I might add, expensive. And she speaks English as her second language. So it's not easy for her to navigate the system. So you're absolutely right with what you just said. I know it personally.
Well, and let me also add to the example you gave, Charles, about being our own worst enemy sometimes, pitting each side against pitting ourselves against our own self-interest. You know, Joel's going to have this roundtable at Plymouth Congregational Church, and we all know Reverend Hagler. And Reverend Hagler is famous for, among other things, going to Smithfield, Virginia, where the people in the ham processing business pitted the workers that had come in from Mexico against the African-American workers that had been there for years, and that there were actually wars going on down there, until Hagler came down and had them both sit down and have dinner with each other. He had dinners every week for these people to get together, because he said, your problem is not each other. Your problem is the people that are trying to separate you, keep you separated, and who are taking advantage of you. And they formed unions, and their lives are a lot better. So we see that happen over and over and over again. Joel, what about homelessness? I know you're involved in homelessness. It's an issue that I much care about. It's a big issue here in Washington. What are we doing on that front? Are we making any progress?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking that question. So I'm on the board of directors of the National Coalition for the Homeless. And Donald Whitehead, who is an incredible executive director, he and I are moving on round two of trying to get a bill passed in Congress that will end homelessness. And there's a national campaign. We meet once a week. There's over 50, 60 organizations. We just had an editorial that was myself, the president of NOW, Christian Nunez, one of the first African-American presidents in maybe 60 years of NOW. And the campaign is being led by people who were either formerly homeless, like myself, or currently homeless. And we're working, with Maxine Waters' office. We're working across the country to build a movement that no one has ever seen before. It's going to be historical. To end homelessness once and for all, I would ask the following question. Why have we allowed such an evil condition to persist for all these years when Reagan cut the affordable housing HUD budget by $80 billion from 81 to 85? Who would have ever dreamed we'd have homeless families, homeless children? And with the fact of the matter is, the Democrats in Congress, in the House, there were not enough votes to restore the CDC's moratorium on evictions. So we're looking at 11 million people, maybe it could be less, facing imminent eviction during the Delta, COVID variants. I can't believe this. Why? See, we got to have a campaign not only to end homelessness, but to end evictions as well. And I'll close by saying almost every country in Europe has a program, TR Reid, the United States of Europe, where the federal government keeps people in their apartment. They don't evict people, but they have to agree to, you know, look for work unless they're disabled. This country is just so barbaric when it comes to the way it treats people of color, poor people, people who lose their job. We need a guaranteed economic safety net. And one of the reasons why we're having our Monday roundtable is we are including ending poverty, ending homelessness as part of, you know, saving democracy and saving our earth, because it's all justice. Is that right, Charles Moreland? It's all justice.
Absolutely, positively. And the great injustice is that the greedy continue to feed on the needy. You ask the question of why isn't somebody doing anything about homelessness and these evictions. Do you know what happens when there's a foreclosure on a home and an eviction? Well, the bank gets that property back. And they also have a claim on the homeowner who loses the house. And then they get the house back and resell the house. And right now you have investors on Wall Street who are coming together to buy foreclosed properties in bulk. I received a document that had over $5 billion worth of late mortgages and homes, and they were selling at a discount because they sell the paper. The $5 billion worth of homes, they're selling it, floating it for $2 billion. And so the ruling class benefits from these foreclosures. They don't care about it. All they're talking about and thinking about is making money. And that's the problem.
Where's our humanity?
Right, and that's what we have to do, right, as government, because the incentive for business is to make money, and that is their motive. And it's up to the government, right, to intercede and make sure things are fair and there's an even playing field and that people are taken care of. And the only way we get government to move, right, is to put pressure on them. I asked this question again to Joel, who worked so many years for a congressman that we all loved. I had a congressman from Virginia, a Republican, Tom Davis, said to me one time, there's only two things you can do to a member of Congress. You can either help them or hurt them. And if you want to get something done, you got to figure out how to do one of those two things. You think that's true, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, if I had five constituents call from Detroit, call Mr. Conyers' office, I would have an emergency meeting. If they were talking about a bill that they were in favor of or a bill that they were against. So the kind of the great misunderstanding and intellectual confusion, even among progressives, is it doesn't matter what you do. Members of Congress only care about the money and the donations. That's false. As someone who worked there for 13 years, at the highest levels, it was the constituent pressure, because every member of Congress that I ever worked with didn't mind making $186,000 a year in the House or whatever they make, $230,000, $240,000 in the Senate. Plus the public servants, the people who, like Mr. Conyers, who really burned for public service and cared about issues facing Detroit, they want to get reelected, and they know who butters their bread, and that's the voters. If you don't have And the weakness, I think, in the progressive movement is we've become, basically what I call click activists, where we click a mouse or we do a tweet. That's not organizing, okay? And all you who are listening and both of you know what organizing is. It's organizing real people and putting immense pressure on your member of Congress in the streets and in the suites. You got to do both. People power matters. Yeah.
But what I'm surprised at, the statement that you just made, is how few constituents you actually paid attention to. Because I think a lot of people go, I'm just one person, I'm just one vote, do I really matter? But you're saying that if five or more contacted you about a specific matter, you would have a meeting about that.
Yeah, yeah. Or I would even tell Mr. Conyers, because so few people would call Mr. Conyers' office who were from, you know, the Detroit metropolitan area. That didn't mean that they weren't, you know, meeting with Mr. Conyers or his staff in the Detroit office, but I'm talking about nationally. If someone said, please sign Mr. Conyers on to a bill, you know, we did it.
Wow.
But, you know, now when the National Rifle Association, when they were against the bill in Congress, for 4 to 5 hours, they would flood the line, and you couldn't, and AIPAC did the same thing. You couldn't do business, you know, and the progressives have to be that sophisticated. And you got Progressive Democrats of America. I'm a co-founder of that organization, first vice chair. They are doing a great job with, you know, lobbying members of Congress, but they need to be more diversified, and I think they would admit that, and needs to be more infrastructure. And that's hopefully something we can accomplish at the roundtable.
Yeah. So, Charles, tell us what other groups are involved. Joel has mentioned a few, and you have mentioned a few. We've got NOW. Is Greenpeace also involved? What other organizations are involved in the march at this point?
Well, yeah, we've been talking to a wide range of organizations, but I just want everybody listening to know that our goal and our plan is to bring every organization under this wide umbrella. There's room for everybody. When we look at our outreach, we're talking about outreach to specific groups, youth, Native Americans, religious leaders, and any and every organization that wants to participate. We're also going to have virtual events, and so we're reaching out. If you go on our website, we've asked organizations to go on the website and just simply agree to support DC statehood, ending taxation without representation, green jobs, green earth, you know, groups that are fighting against those, you know, voter suppression. So we're going to list, in fact, on the website on Wednesday, we're going to list all of the groups who have signed up. And we have there's a page on the site for groups to go in, and we ask people to go in for organizations to sign up and just simply agree to support the march and the three issues that make up the three-issue coalition. And then we're going to list all those organizations. We also have a way for you to upload your logos. Every D.C. statehood organization. And there are a number, and I don't want to mention one and not mention the others, but we're going to list the organizations that signed up on Wednesday chronologically. We're going to be bipartisan, and that's very important. I just want to emphasize that and say again that the Electoral College is what divides us into red states and blue states. And they're all kind of, so they're structural methods and instruments that divide us. And so our goal and our plan with this Dream March on Washington for D.C. statehood, green earth, and justice is to unify Americans. And we understand that you talking about government, is this a government
of the people, for the people, and by the people, or is this a government of the money, for the money, and by the money? Mm-hmm. And our goal is to make this a government of the people, for the people,
yeah,
by the people.
Very good.
Again.
Go ahead, Maria. Yes.
Well, I'd like us to mention that it's douglascommonwealth.us where all of the information is available. Not only that, but your organizing tools section, if anybody wants to get involved in a event or two events or whatever, it seems to me that you can pick and choose if you do Friday or Saturday or Sunday or Monday or and. Is that correct? And also the events too. I see you have a sign up for that as well. Do you want to tell people, though, about registering? Because I really want you to be prepared for the number of people who may want to participate.
Yes, you can go online, again, www.douglascommonwealth.us. And remember, Frederick Douglass spelled his name with two S's in Douglass. So it's, again, www.douglascommonwealth.us. And so we have organizing tools for the actual events. And considering that this Delta variant is I don't want to repeat what I've been hearing, but it seems to be not just gaining steam, but some people are saying winning, and I don't believe it's winning because we are going to prevail. But we have to be considerate of that. Let me let everybody know that we're going to have in the outdoor events the march. We're going to have 24, 48, and 60-foot social distancing for groups on the mall. So you'll be able to social distance. We're also going to have what we hope will be one of the largest events on the mall and testing. So those who can make it, who can come out to the mall, we're asking you to. But we also plan to have one of the largest virtual marches in history. Given the seriousness of the existential issues, threats that we face, we're asking everybody to find a way to participate and make sure you let the Congress and the President know that we are demanding that they take action and not just stay gridlocked. Get rid of the filibuster. Do something. That's
my
what we
question.
Ask.
If you participate in the virtual march and you have to scroll way down on the web page to register for that, will there be a camera on the proceedings so that we can watch it remotely?
Absolutely. We're going to have and everything is designed. Our plan is to have everything designed and posted and ready. All the organizing toolkits will be up and ready by Wednesday. We're asking people to go online and register, sign up to attend or host a virtual event. We want events in every state, actual events. If you go over the website, and of course we also have had great suggestions as we've been building the website for people and how to develop more accurate and more user-friendly toolkits for people to sign up. But yes, we want people to go on, and those people who are hosting virtual events, we're going to have them sign up. And then those individuals who want to attend virtual events, we have a way for them to sign up to attend also.
Nice.
Joel, you want to tell us a little bit about PDA, Progressive Democrats of America? It's an organization I've been involved with for a couple of years. You know that Andrea is one of my favorite people on the planet. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing and how that came to be, and give people a sense of what it is.
Well, Progressive Democrats of America started a guy named Tim Carpenter out of Orange County, California, and Mimi Kennedy, the actress Mimi Kennedy, Stung Moms, and Darman Gregg, and they had a cadre of people from California, Massachusetts. They worked on the Kucinich campaign, and many of them were the senior organizers of the Kucinich campaign. After the campaign was over, they decided to form Progressive Democrats of America. They had a conference in Roxbury, Massachusetts. I had tried to do the same thing on the Hill on the Senate side. I was also trying to create something like a Progressive Democrats of America because I knew that the Progressive Caucus had to be pushed further and that they needed more members. But that conference on the Senate side, it didn't work. But the PDA was very successful in forming the PDA. I helped organize the first national conference at the University of District Columbia, so thank you, Washington, D.C. And in a huge snowstorm, many of your leading progressive activists came to UDC, and this was an historical moment. And there were people from the Green Party, there were people from the Rainbow Coalition, and I brought a lot of staffers from the Hill, but we agreed to form the Progressive Democrats of America. That was almost 17 years ago. Since that time, PDA has formed chapters all over the country, and they were the organization to ask Bernie Sanders to run for president. And that I never imagined that would happen, because when I worked with Bernie, he was the pariah of the Democratic Party. No one wanted to associate with him.
Yeah.
He was the socialist radical. And although he had probably one of the best staff on the Hill and wrote some of the most incredible bills. And all that being said, the PDA made that happen. And then what they're doing now is they've been focusing on Medicare for all, single payer. What they do is they do two things. They get behind like people like Nina Turner in Ohio. They raise money, they get behind these campaigns, they get grassroots folks to go door to door, and or they lobby progressive legislation. And it just needs more. They need more funding and more diversity. So I'm helping them with the diversity.
Well, it's a great organization, and I've done some things with them on the Hill. And I just think it's amazing how it's grown, and thank you for doing that, for your involvement.
Thank you.
Maria, we're running out of time here, so Maria, you got another question?
Yeah, I'm just curious, how can we access the events via streaming?
Charles?
Yes, we are right now negotiating with a streaming company, but all the events will be live streamed. And all that's going to be posted on the website. Even the, especially the events related to the All Faith and Interfaith Coordinating Council, which is headed by Reverend George Holmes. But yeah, we're going to have live streaming and the way and the how of it. That's a little bit beyond my pay grade, but it's going to be.
But it's
the
in
how
the
well. I know that we're negotiating with the best live streaming company in the country. And we have their proposal, but Joel, maybe you can take on that live streaming description. I know it will be there, but how it's done?
Okay.
There's a live streaming service in DC that I think they're some of the best that I've ever seen, and we'll be in conversations with them probably early next week. So. We will have live streaming, but Charles wanted to give different, businesses a chance because he's a good guy. Well, but yeah, we will have live streaming.
Great.
And
it's
going to
work out by this Wednesday, but the how and the what, I just watch.
All we have to know is it'll be there and just click to watch.
It'll be there. Absolutely, it'll be there.
Yes.
And we'll continue to update people on the technical aspects of the march as we go forward. You know, we'll give you an update every week on the show because we're all intimately involved in this. And let me tell you, I'm very impressed by the people that have gotten involved in this movement. I hope everybody out there that's capable of coming to the march will come to the march. It's just such a great group of people. The sentiment is, wonderful that we really we need to band together to make change. And I think this is really going to be a turning point for us. So we're running out of time here. Let me just ask each one of you if there's any last thing you want to say. Joel Siegel, thank you so much for your years of service on the Hill and your continued service. And Charles Moreland, just like Joel, I'm one of your many fans, and we appreciate all you've done to organize this. But is there any last thing either one of you want to say before we go?
Charles, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll defer for you. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I would just say, you know, I lived in D.C. metropolitan area for 23 years, and when I was living in Adams Morgan, by the way, Sweet Honey and the Rock were my neighbors. They were. I'm also a professional musician, so they used to hear me play my bass, and I used to hear them sing. So we got to know each other, and they were like my idols, man. But when I was living in D.C., I was really angry that I couldn't vote right for Congress, and people have to understand this is a fundamental right, man. It is taxation without representation. I hope that our conference and our summit will also provide exponentially more allies for the D.C. statehood movement. Last thing I want to say is if Martin Luther King was alive today, the first thing he would do, because I was trained by almost all of Martin King's lieutenants, right, especially the Honorable Fauntleroy, who was one of my most important mentors. If they were in a room right now, they would be eating food and laughing, plotting, you know, their next move. And the way they would do it is they would say, okay, what are all the organizations that we need to, you know, bring together for this march or to pass this bill? That's how they organized back then. And somehow that changed. Let's go back to the most brilliant leaders of color. Martin King, right? SNCC, Nelson Mandela, the African National Congress, the People United behind the ANC flagship, and they got rid of de Klerk and they got rid of South Africa's apartheid regime. Mahatma Gandhi created the what? The Indian National Congress to drive out the British. Let's learn from history, replicate it. We need a new America. The old system by the oligarchs and the 1% are ruining this country. Democracy is being stolen right in front of our eyes. Mother Earth is in jeopardy. We have to unify to meet this challenge. This is the first time in my lifetime. How we organize will depend whether or not we save Mother Earth and whether or not we save our democracy. So we don't have the luxury of being in silos. But thanks. Thanks for having me on, Senator Brown. And thank you for your fight for D.C. statehood.
Yeah, and thank you. We'll have to end it there because we're out of time. But thank you again, Charles Moreland. And we'll have you back again. And thank you again, Joel Siegel, for all your hard work. And, you know, we leave you every week with a song dedicated to our guests. And this is a song that was sung at the original March on Washington by Peter, Paul, and Mary, If I Had a Hammer. And this goes out to Charles and to Joel and to all the people in the progressive movement that are working hard to make a better America. Thanks, and we'll see you next week. Maria?
We appreciate you, listeners. Thank you.
Senator, thank you so very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.